Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is We Have Communicators, episode 189, recorded on October 3rd, 2013. Enjoy! All right, it's time for We Have Communicators, the show that covers all things iOS and beyond. I'm Michael Johnston, and with me is Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observer. Hey, Jeff, how's it going?
It's going dang fine.
Good. It's good to hear. Yeah. And also Adam Christensen's here from the MacCast. Hey, Adam, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing all right. I'm coming off a nasty, like, week-long cold thingy. Feeling a little bit better, but okay.
I had one of those, too.
See, this is why I stopped drinking out of toilets, Adam.
It was yuck.
Yeah.
Yeah. I usually get sick right before vacation, and either I get my girlfriend sick or she gets me sick. So it's a nice back and forth that we have. It's cute. So yeah, I was sick in DC.
That's called sharing. That's so sweet.
It is, yeah. But yeah, so that's why we didn't have a show last week, is because I was in Washington, D.C. for a wedding, and it was fun and fancy. So, but we're back, and we're talking about iOS stuff. And you know, the first thing I want to talk about is kind of fun to talk about, the fact that according to a report from Interbrand, they say that Apple has overtaken Coca-Cola as the new most valuable brand in the world. So they've moved. So they're number one, Google's number two, and Coca-Cola's number three. It's kind of interesting, especially in the wake of all the naysaying that's been happening regarding Apple lately. But I guess pretty positive thoughts have come out of the recent iPhone introductions, right? Stock price has been performing a little better, I guess, but everything's down today. I don't know why.
Yeah, well, keep in mind, this study isn't just about share values.
Certainly not, yes. Well, but share values, it's good to compare both of these things, because share value is totally wacko. It's based on the whims of the stock traders and crazy people who work with stocks, right? And those people are fickle. And mm-hmm. So it doesn't necessarily reflect anything, as we've said on multiple occasions. So I think that it's interesting to see this this opposing opinion of positivity regarding Apple, that we haven't really seen a whole lot of that in recent months, other than the fact that the iPhone 5S and 5C are super cool and people seem to be digging them, right?
Yeah.
So you guys both got your iPhone 5S's?
Yeah. Yes.
I did not get one.
Right here in my hand.
I got a. I'm continuing with my iPhone 5. Did you get gold ones?
No.
No one got gold. I know one person that got a gold one, and he sat in line in Austin overnight.
Yeah. So I had a gold one. I had a gold one in my hands. I had a gold ticket in my hands for a little bit.
Yeah, that's good. So you guys.
And then I sold it to some dude in line.
Because
I felt
this
guilty.
This is why I love you, Adam.
Well, because he felt guilty, and I gave him a really good price on it, and I felt guilty. I was going to fully just buy it and sell it on eBay and cash in and do that whole thing, you know?
You should have.
I know.
You're a sucker. How much were they selling for?
You would have made a lot more money, but
I would have made
you earned
a
lot of karma points.
Yeah.
This is true.
But I looked back, and he had those little, you know, sad kitty eyes, and I really wanted a gold one. And he probably turned around and sold it for 10 grand on eBay.
Yeah, what a jerk.
And I'm a schmuck.
Yeah, you are.
Yeah, but
you have
anyway.
Two more dollars in your pocket, plus there were the sexual favors. So go you.
I got the cash, you know, right away, and I didn't have to deal with all that eBay stuff.
So you sold him just a ticket. You didn't even sell him a phone.
Yeah, you just sold him the ticket.
Correct.
That's pretty cool. How much did you sell it for? You want to say?
No.
Okay.
Extortion. Not enough. Let's just say that.
Okay, so it's the opposite of extortion. You totally feel bad that you didn't cash in. I understand.
Yeah, because I didn't really want a gold one. And then I was like, well, I waited in line all night. I'm at the front of the line. I can get one. You know, and then the guy like three back, it's like, oh, you're out of gold. I wanted that one. It was even a Verizon phone. I'm not even a Verizon customer. So, yeah. Huh. I have this really bad habit of not being able to be a jerk.
You really are one of the nicest guys I've ever met. I'm not just saying that. It's true.
I know. I get that a lot. I think I'd be a lot further along in life, though, if I didn't have that character trait.
Yeah. It's fun to be
I wouldn't feel good about myself, but I'd be a lot further along.
Yeah. You'd have a lot more fun, too.
Probably.
It's fun to be mean.
Steve Jobs thought so.
This is true. This is true. So, moving on to a very interesting story that just popped up today. Apple acquired a personal assistant app called Q that I had not heard of at all until about 20 minutes ago when I saw the story. So thankfully, our own Jeff Gamet, just finished writing up a little article on Q and the acquisition. So you probably know a little bit more than at least me. So why don't you let us know what Q is?
Okay, so Q is a it kind of fits in with the whole Google Now and Siri sort of thing, where it can collect information that's relevant to whatever it is that you need to know and then present it to you. The difference is that what Q does is it goes through your social networking sites, it goes through your email, and it goes through documents that you have stored, like on Dropbox. And then it puts together all that information. And when you ask for something, then it can find everything that relates to whatever your query is and put it together in a meaningful way and present it to you so that you're not overwhelmed with information. And it doesn't matter where it comes from. It's just all right there and strung together in a meaningful way. So it's really kind of cool. And I'm bummed that they didn't have good enough outreach, PR outreach, so that I would have known about this a long time ago, so I could have been using it, because it would have been really handy.
Totally. So is it gone now? Oh, no, it looks like it's still in the store.
It's still there, but the service doesn't work.
Oh. So they Siri'd it.
Yeah. And but see, that's the thing. It's going to become part of Siri. You just know it.
Yeah, next year.
Yes, but it's going to happen. Or for all we know, they've been doing all this negotiation and collaboration for a while, and they just needed to go through the formality of buying the company. And now that that's done, they can finish popping the pieces in and give us all of this new functionality right away. It would make sense for Apple to do something that lets us have the Q features rolled into Siri sooner as opposed to later, because one of the key things I think out of this is that it can then make Siri an anticipatory service, which I'm surprised I got that out without just stumbling over the words. An anticipatory service more than Google Now is. And the cool thing about Google Now is that it figures out what you're doing or what you're going to be doing, and then it puts together information that's contextually relevant. So now picture having Siri that already does everything it does and adding in features that let it do more than what Google Now does. And I always talk about the Knowledge Navigator concept that Apple had back in the late 80s, early 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And Siri gets us a lot closer to what Knowledge Navigator was envisioned as. Throw in Q, and now we're tantalizingly close to what Knowledge Navigator was.
I figured I'd just hear a lot more of, oh, I'm sorry, I couldn't help you with what you wanted 20 minutes ago.
You know, I know what the problem is there, and it's that you're actually not as nice as people think you are. And this is Siri just getting even, just dishing you out some bad karma.
iOS 7 broke Siri.
Oh, it did?
Siri's working pretty well for me.
You guys don't get, like, all the time now I get, oh, I'm sorry, there was a problem. or
I
whatever
do get
she
that
says
occasionally, but
over
not,
and over and over and over. And then I have to.
I'm not getting it like you are, but I do get that.
I've had emails from at least a dozen people who have had exactly the same experience. So I know it's not just me.
Well, hopefully it's something that they can fix without a software update.
It cropped up in the last couple betas. It was fine. Siri was working great until I think the second to last beta or something like that. And then I started having this problem and I figured, oh, maybe they're just, you know, expanding and they're having network problems or something like that. But it hasn't gone away yet. So I don't know what the deal is. It's like it's a communication problem because usually I'll get the error message and then I'll just have to repeat myself. And on the second or third try, it usually goes through. But consistently or more frequently on the first activation, I'm getting those error messages. It's really annoying.
Like with what sort of stuff? Oops.
It's just anytime you activate Siri. So if my phone's been asleep and I go to activate Siri, I'll ask it something and then it'll spin, take forever. And then I know what's coming. She's going to tell me, oh, there's a problem. I can't help you. Super annoying.
Do you talk mean to Siri? And I'm asking seriously. Do you talk
mean
to Siri?
Yes, I have. Yeah. And I told you guys the really fun thing with the updates in iOS 7 is if you get angry enough for long enough, she'll eventually just give up and her response will be, sigh.
Ugh.
Now, okay, so the reason I'm asking is because I have fewer problems with Siri not being able to help me than you do, and a lot of other people do. I'm always polite to Siri. I have totally anthropomorphized this feature. And I mean, really, I have. Like to the point where when the voice changed for iOS 7, I felt creepy and I felt like I was cheating on Siri, which is totally irrational. But the real point is, other than the fact that I clearly need some sort of mental help, is that I always talk nice to Siri. Is there a correlation between the fact that I'm always nice and polite to this feature and the fact that I have fewer issues with Siri being able to return information to me?
I hope not, but
okay. I do call her really nasty names sometimes because she deserves it.
Yeah.
Now, Michael, would you talk to your girlfriend this way?
No, because I like my girlfriend and I want to keep her.
And I like Siri and I want to keep her. And so I work, what I'm doing, see, I'm working on good communication skills in this relationship. And good communication skills are really critical to a healthy and positive relationship. Let's hug.
But, okay, maybe that's it. Maybe that's it.
Relationships are work. All sides have to meet halfway if it's going to be successful.
I guess it's true. I guess you're right. Okay.
All right, let's move on.
Yeah, let's move on. So what do you guys think about the people being complaining about the motion sickness with iOS 7? You think they're just trying to get out of work? I think they're just trying to get out of work. Hey,
I don't have a problem with the motion, the parallax stuff. I have, however, met people that do have an issue. And granted, my sample base in this case is 3.
Okay.
But all 3 of the people legitimately had trouble. So at least in my sampling, it's not people just trying to get out of work. It's people that are really having issues. And all 3 of the people had similar traits. They can't read when they're in a car. There was another motion related thing that they just can't do, and I forgot what it was. But yeah, they all had the same traits.
And what's weird is, I think we talked about this, Jeff, someplace else, and my wife has that problem of not being able to read in the car. It makes her car sick. But she has not told me. I mean, she doesn't like iOS 7 for other reasons, but she has not told me she's had any issues with the motion stuff.
Yeah.
She generally does hate, though, the motion stuff. Doesn't make her ill, but she just doesn't like all of the, you know, swishy, floating around animation kind of stuff.
Did you turn it off for her?
Well, you can't turn it off.
We can reduce it, I guess.
Right? The only thing you can turn off is the parallax thing, which is so subtle. I can't imagine that makes a lot of people sick. I would imagine more people would get sick just from how much, you know, like zooming and extraneous animation is going on.
Yeah. But, you know what? I actually just updated my phone maybe 2 or 3 hours ago because I really wanted my jailbreak hack for tethering when I was on vacation. So I finally did it when I got back. And in that couple hours, I noticed that the animations they sort of get in the way of me trying to do things because I'm trying to do something before the animation finishes.
Bloody slow.
Yeah, I would be fine with the animations if I could, you know, when I'm throwing up the control center and I want to toggle something, I throw it up and I press the button and it doesn't work because it hasn't fully bounced or whatever. And then I press it again and then it works. And that's kind of irritating. And I think that's a pretty common frustration, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And then what's with this iMessage issue? I'm not familiar with what's going on.
I've run into that too. Occasionally you'll go to send an iMessage and it just won't send.
So it like immediately.
You get a little red error.
But you don't
get it right away.
Oh,
right.
Okay.
I wasn't getting the problem at all until I wrote about it and I'm consistently having it. So again, karma is a bitch.
Hopefully I don't have that issue. Did you guys both, you got your iPhone 5S's, but I was going to ask if you did an upgrade or if you did a restore, because I did a restore on mine.
I did a restore.
I did an upgrade.
Okay.
The other issue that I've been having that I had with iMessage, and I had to just basically log out of my account on the device and reset it up, was I had one of my iPads was not getting... iMessage are supposed to go to all your devices. I think it was my full size iPad after upgrading. I wasn't getting messages there, even though it was logged into the account, which was odd. But.
Yeah. I think it's just new OS kind of tweaky things. I had an issue with my keyboard shortcuts. They worked initially and then I rebooted and then they didn't work and they were gone from settings, and then I rebooted again, and then they worked again, and they were there. So, yeah, I'm not surprised. You know, I think that a lot of these sorts of issues will go away when we see our 7.1 update. But there is
the iMessage fix, so people know. I mean, one that worked for me was just simply rebooting the device.
Yeah, try rebooting, and if it didn't work, try rebooting again, because you know, keep doing it until it works.
I don't know about that. The other recommendation was if the reboot didn't work, to do the whole reset settings thing, which is annoying because you have to then reset up all your Wi-Fi networks and stuff like that.
Yeah, but that is a major pain.
You could give that a shot.
Yeah, that's one of the things.
It's less extreme than doing a full restore, at least.
I hate when the genius tells me to do that thing. Because none of your data or stuff that you've saved, all that convenient stuff that doesn't matter to you, just erase everything because that's how you fix it.
Oh, no, like, you don't have to do this for this.
I know that.
Thing, you don't have to do the full erase thing. You just do the reset the network settings one, which
right.
You lose your Wi-Fi that settings and stuff.
But again, that one is a total pain in itself because there are tons of passwords.
Because you can never remember your Wi-Fi password. Well, I know.
My password's easy, and it's been a phone number that doesn't exist anymore forever.
8675309.
Yeah, you've been to my house. So, but there are other passwords, but I'm just saying in general, I hate when that's the only solution because it's not like the Mac where you can dump a plist, right? You have to either have them all or get rid of them all. And that's a really frustrating thing with the iPhone. And it doesn't seem like there's any sort of understanding on the end of the genius who says, oh yeah, just erase everything.
Well, the worst one is when he then follows it up with and set it up as a new device.
Right.
Like, are you freaking serious?
Are you nuts? Okay, how about you do it and then I'll do it.
And then we'll come back and get my anger birds back to the level I was on.
Exactly.
And all my stars back.
Exactly. Yeah, I think that should be included. I think that should totally be included. If you're going to recommend that, reset up my phone the way it was before. Or use iFunbox. iFunbox is a great tool, by the way. Have you guys used that?
No, I have PhoneView and iPhone Backup Extractor and some others.
Well,
kind of do similar sorts of things, right?
It does a similar thing, but in different means. The way that iFunbox works is it actually accesses that that user partition that
right.
is accessible via iTunes, and it's magic that it does. So with iFunbox, you can actually, you just plug in your phone, open iFunbox, and then you have access to a majority of the stuff on your phone. You definitely have access to the stuff, all of the applications and all the data within the applications. And you can jump in there, open a plist, make a tweak, or upload a backup, or make a backup, whatever you want to do. It has a lot of really great options.
Yeah,
and
it's how
free.
People hack their high scores, right?
Yes, that is. Yeah, exactly. That's how you hack your high scores. And there are tons of other great uses for it too. So,
so you too can be a jerk on Game Center.
Not iPhone Box, right?
Yeah, iPhone Box. Not to be confused with iFuntastic, which happened. What, 6 years ago? Six, 5 or 6 years ago, you remember that? iFuntastic?
No.
Oh, that sounds vaguely familiar.
It was one of those apps that, it was like the first GUI iPhone jailbreak app, and I helped the guy out using iPhone Alley, because he didn't really have a lot of PR, and he didn't have a solid place to host the thing. So, yeah, a little,
cool.
little bit of history. So, moving on, we're looking at there's some rumors from BGR, Boy Genius Reports, that we're going to see 703 coming soon. They didn't really say anything about what would be included in that.
wait, stop.
Didn't we allude to what might be in it?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. That's very. Very likely what will be in it, but they didn't say what would be in it. I'm just making that clear. Although the build numbers, I guess, are a little bit strange for a 7.0 point whatever release, because the build number changed from 11A to 11B something something. So it'll be interesting to see what other things, if it's super significant, or if it's just another like we made the colon in the time flash now. Kind of thing. I don't know. And yeah, so did you guys see that story about how Apple Maps directed a guy into an airport? That kind of sucked, didn't it?
I had that problem when I was in Utah.
Was he off to get a flight?
Probably.
I had that problem in Utah, as a matter of fact, just FYI.
It took you through an airport?
Well, it took me to the like back service entrance of the airport rather than to the front terminal entrance where I actually needed to go.
You know,
and
that's...
there was like no way like through.
Yeah, that's tough because there are people who do need to go back there.
Right. Yeah, no, I didn't get upset or anything. I was like, ah, oh, crap, I should have been paying more attention. Well, you know, it's the classic common sense thing, right? You're going along, and that would apply, you know, for this poor guy that ended up, you know, wherever on the runway. But I kind of knew, like, it's directing me, and I'm like, this doesn't look right to me.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, it's that classic
you get that sense.
That The Office episode where they're looking at the GPS and it directs them into a lake, and they drive into a lake. It's one of those things where you just kind of need to pay attention, which is why you're supposed to be relying on the voice, not the actual looking at the phone, so you can pay attention to what's happening on the road. My favorite thing about the new maps in iOS 7 is that you can change the volume of turn by turn from the app.
Yes.
That is so great. Because it was so, so dumb that you had to go into settings and do all this crazy stuff while you're driving, so... I'm happy about that. So, moving on to the iPhone 5S and C, in-store pickup is now available for, I believe...
Again.
Yeah, again. It was available, and then they pulled
for
it
about
right
five
down.
Minutes.
Yep. And then now it's available again. Is it just for the 5S or is it 5C as well?
5C never went down. They had the 5C availability the whole time.
Okay. So you can do
that. Because 5Cs aren't rare.
Right. Yeah.
Plenty of those floating around if you want one.
It's not that they're not selling well. It's just that
they're in good supply.
They're in good supply. And I think that the newer top of the line iPhone is one of those things that more people are clamoring for because it's the iPhone 5C is a sort of different market than the 5S. So, but I like it. I got a chance to play with one, as I'm sure you guys did, and they're pretty impressive. Nice and hard and sleek and good in the hand.
I really liked it when I checked it out in the store. I mean, like I can't remember if I said on this podcast. I've said on a couple podcasts. It's that device when people are especially going into a carrier store or a Best Buy or a Walmart or something like that, and they're, you know, considering an Android phone, and then they're holding that versus the iPhone. You know, it's kind of one of those things that'll push, I think, a lot of people over the edge to the iPhone, even if it's a little more expensive, because the build quality and just the colors are great. The build quality is superb. And I, you know, I went to an AT&T store the same day to check out some of the Android phones. And with the exception of, there was like one model that was pretty decent. But I mean, most of them just feel really, when you pick them up, feel like they have no substance to them at all.
Yeah.
You just feel like cheap and flimsy. You know, even though they're the bigger screens and stuff like that. And, you know, for a lot of people, that sort of hand feel of the device makes a big difference.
Yeah, definitely. Matters. But, you know, I think that a lot of that comes from the plastic door that you can pop off to replace the battery, right? I would say that most of the other components, the other sections on the phone are probably a little sturdier than that portion, wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, but when you have them side by side, that's the thing. I mean, that's the key for Apple is when you take the two things side by side, there's really not a lot of comparison.
Yeah.
Just in terms of that, I mean, you can get into other features and functionality, but just in terms of the substance of it, I mean, it's just got some weight to it. It's got some density to it. It just feels like it's really well made.
Mm-hmm. It is a really solid feeling phone.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's frickin' lacquered, so it's got to be solid.
And it's fun. I mean, and then you've got all, you know, all the other ones that are just boring, and then you've got these bright colors. You know, I think it's one of those, it's the sort of the, when you're on the fence, it's the thing that's going to push you over the edge one way or the other. I mean, that's where the advantage comes in.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like it in the other phone, you know, when you're going feature by feature, the other phone could have it totally beat. But when you're just sitting there on the fence, and the other thing is, I think, things like the quality of photos that it takes. I mean, even that iPhone 5C takes better pictures than most of those other phones. So you start playing around with features like that, and then you add on top of it how, you know, the quality, then it pushes people right over to the iPhone side. So I think proof will be in the pudding after the holiday quarter. I think they're going to sell a lot of 5Cs over the holidays.
I think you're right. I don't like it. I mean, as aesthetically, the colors are not appealing to me at all.
Me neither.
It feels nice in my hand, and I know I'm not the demographic because people love the colors a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yep. Okay, so we have a lot more to talk about, but before we get to that, we got to talk about our wonderful sponsor, which is Squarespace, and of course, it's everything that you need to create an exceptional website. And, you know, I love having advertisers like Squarespace on We Have Communicators because it's one of those products that I can fully, fully endorse. And I would recommend it to people even if they weren't a sponsor. I've probably spoken to three or four people since I did the last spot just casually saying, oh, why don't you have a Squarespace website? Because, I mean, if you're having issues where you're either the only person or you're doing a small business, what have you, Squarespace does a lot for you, such as they have the mobile responsive designs. They have tons of beautiful designs already built in, and you can customize them as much as you want, so you don't have to do a whole lot of coding or anything like that. And you can make it look exactly the way that you want it. So they have all that, of course, as you know, and you can go to squarespace.com, click get started, and see all of those. And you can actually build a website without entering any credit card information. You get the 14-day free trial. And then, of course, if you want to go on and get a full plan, use the code WHC10. You'll get 10% off, and that's WHC10 for the month of October or WHC11 for November. They have a bunch of other stuff, too, including galleries, pages, and blogs. That's included with every single plan. You get all three of those items built into any site that you want, and depending on the level, you get a limited number, unlimited, or if you go with the business plan, which is totally cool. It's one of the best things that Squarespace has going for it now, because I think it's totally unique and they do a great job with it, is Squarespace Commerce. They're recently now in the UK. You can now take donations with Squarespace Commerce. They have custom form elements so that you can sell items that maybe have customizable things like shape or color or style or what have you. They have new features for photographers so that when you upload images with your Squarespace website, of course, it's all Ajax and you can just throw it up onto the window. You just drag the photos from your desktop onto the window. You don't have to worry about doing the upload form. It's nice drag and drop kind of thing, but it grabs all of the metadata from your images, so you don't have to go back and retype the names or worry about not having the locations or the information about the camera. You get all that wonderful stuff, so you have that in your galleries when you upload to Squarespace, so it autofills all that information from the metadata. Of course, I said there was the drag and drop. You get great features for restaurants if you either manage a website, restaurant, or you maybe, I don't know, review food or something like that. There's some cool features such as the menu block. So you can drag a specialized block for restaurant menus right to your website, and it's perfectly formatted for that kind of stuff. You can do open table reservations built into the website, and you can also do events, image galleries for food, and of course there are tons of other cool blocks. They call them blocks, and they're just sort of little widgets that you can throw into your website. Stuff like Google Maps widgets, a bunch of social widgets. I mean, they take care of everything. It's so great. When I talk to somebody who doesn't have a Squarespace website, I just say, hey, why don't you? It has all the stuff that you need built into it. So yeah, and of course they have amazing uptime. You don't have to worry about anything. You just build it. You don't have to have technical background. Of course, WHC10, use that code. When you go through, you get 10% off, and it lets them know where you heard about it. And yeah, check out their plans, squarespace.com. And yeah, use the offer code WHC10 or November WHC11. It's everything you need to create an exceptional website. Check them out. Thanks to Squarespace for sponsoring We Have Communicators. It's great to have them. So with that, let's see. Let me scroll up here. Do you hear what the Qualcomm marketing executive said about the 64-bit feature in the A7? He said it was a marketing gimmick. It kind of is. I think that it kind of is, you know? What do you guys think? No?
No. It is absolutely not a marketing gimmick. It's an actual feature. It doesn't have a lot of widespread use yet, but it's brand new.
This is true. So I guess there have been some benchmarks that show that once an app has been updated with 64-bit support, in some cases you do get a significant increase in speed and performance.
I don't know. I did some real-world testing, and I could see it in things like iPhoto.
Yeah. Well, yeah,
scenarios.
You know what? I think that would definitely be a great case for it, because that's a computationally intensive thing, depending
on
what
you're
doing.
Only specific areas. So, you know, like just general scrolling and opening the app and those sorts of actions didn't make a difference, you know, but I put my iPhone 5 and my 5S side by side with the same images and just went through doing some things. And when you get into some of the more advanced filters, it was like twice as fast in some cases with applying some of the filter effects, you know, and the more advanced editing effects. So I think there definitely is some advantages. It's not going to be across the board, but in specific scenarios, and I have to imagine, I didn't try this, but I bet you if I took an iMovie that I had in the iMovie app and was exporting it to Vimeo or YouTube, I'm guessing my 5S would do it a lot faster.
Oh, heck yeah.
Than my 5.
Yeah, that's definitely one of those things that would benefit from the 64-bit.
So, and I think the key for Apple is they're really trying, especially with, you know, I'm fully expecting that we'll see a 64-bit processor update in the iPads. When it comes to the iPad, they're really focusing on trying to get these things more and more on the content creation side, get more and more people using them for content creation. And that's where this is going to come into play, right? Those more advanced applications where you're actually making stuff on your devices, be it movies, be it photos, be it games and programming. I mean, all these things are going to make a big difference. If you imagine being able to start to really program on it and you've got compile time stuff that you need to do, you know, can help out there as well.
Yeah.
Did I lose you guys?
No, we're here.
Quiet there.
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting that right on the heels of that, we started seeing some interesting facts about benchmarking on Android phones. So initially we saw a report from Ars Technica where, and I don't know how they figured this out, but they found out that using Geekbench, of course, you get one score on the Galaxy Note 3, but then they discovered this somehow, and they realized that and I think that it was based
on
the
fact... Well,
they noticed
anomalies.
Yeah, they
not
noticed...
Not every phone is doing this, so they had two phones with exactly the same processor.
Right, yes.
At the same clock speed, and one was scoring, you know, significantly higher than the other, and it didn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so they somehow disabled the fancy thing that was overclocking the processor when a benchmarking application was detected, and they found that it was 20% faster with this artificial increase. So typically the phone doesn't run at this overclocked rate. So of course the processor can do it, but and I think that traditionally mobile devices have had underclocked CPUs, or at least they weren't overclocked for the sake of battery and temperature and that sort of thing. And then right after that, AnandTech looked at a bunch of different phones, and they basically said that nearly all current devices, except for Apple and Motorola, have this artificial increasing happening. So like the HTC One, the Moto X, no, not the Moto X. You know, they didn't list iPhone on this graph. The Nexus 4, Nexus 7, Samsung Galaxy S4, Galaxy Note 3, Tab 3, quite a few other ones. Asus Pad Phone.
Pad Phone. That's just... Oh, Christ, people.
Hey.
That's the one where your phone slides into the little tablet thing, right?
Is it?
Yeah, they have a device where you have your smartphone, and then it has another piece that uses the smartphone, and then it becomes a tablet.
Oh, right. Yeah, that sounds like an Asus product. Oh, yep. I'm looking at their website right now. That's pretty fun. So then you can hide your phone.
I mean... It kind of seems funny, but there were a lot of rumors way back when, before Apple did the iPad, that was one of the concepts that Apple was looking at.
Well, they probably
were
looking
at that. We
saw
like leak specs and, you know, all the other fun stuff. So,
Pad
makes sense. We've seen and heard also rumors at some point in, you know, with what Apple is doing with processors, this could become a reality at one point where, you know, your smartphone or your tablet would dock into your desktop, and so you just always have your processor, you know, sort of with you and your apps and things like that. So, you know, it's funny, but it's also kind of interesting too. We may get to the point where your phone is just the thing that drives everything.
Yeah. Yep, the little communicators.
Exactly.
And we would have them.
This is true. We would. Sounds like a show I know.
No.
So did you guys see the calibration for the iPhone 5S with the level application, the map level feature? I guess it's a little bit off in the 5S.
Yes, it seems to be. I noticed when I was comparing a 5 to a 5S that I wrote a tip for TMO and I used a 5 and 5S just to see how they would compare.
Mm-hmm.
And they were off from each other.
Boy, that sucks. Did you use a level? I'm curious to know if it's just the 5S that's been affected or if it's more than the 5S.
No, I didn't have a level available to me.
Okay. Yeah, that's what they're reporting on, is that the 5S is the one with the issue. The compass appears to be off by 8 to 10 degrees, and the inclinometer is incorrect by 2 degrees on level surfaces.
There's about a 2-degree difference between a 5 and a 5S.
And this is with the leveling feature?
Or is this a hardware problem? Because aren't those sensors now part of the M7?
Yeah, well, yeah, that is the question. And at this point, we don't know. I would imagine there's got to be a way to fix it. As it's uniform with...
consistently wrong, yeah.
Yeah.
Right?
So then
right.
They can tweak it in software.
Yeah, as far as the compass being off, the readings that I was, getting on a 5 versus 5S, I really wasn't seeing any difference.
Oh, so the compass is similar with all of them?
And keep in mind, again, small test base because it was one of each. But that was pretty much the same. But the level, the 5S was consistently about 2 degrees off from whatever the 5 was showing. And I didn't have any way of being able to tell which one was correct, if either.
Mm. The compass being that far off would be significant if that's the case. I mean, 8 to 10 degrees could really screw somebody up.
Yeah, that's really bad.
Well, the compass has never worked reliably for me. It's always been one of those things.
How would you know?
Because I know which direction things are. And it's usually one of those things where I swing it around a bunch of times and it says, oh, you're over here. No, you're over here. No, I don't know.
Maybe now you have the new wheelie animation for that, which is I like better.
Where you spin it?
You roll the ball around the circle.
Yeah,
I prefer that too.
I like it. It's fun.
I hated the figure eight stupid thing. It's always annoying. Hold your arm out and wave it in a figure eight.
See, my assumption like was... person. Yeah.
Sorry.
My assumption was whenever you did that, the FaceTime camera kicked on and Apple was filming you doing that. And then all those videos were used at the company Christmas party.
Yeah, like biting your lower lip and kind of looking a little bit frustrated and shaking your phone around.
That's right. Here's the pensive recalibrate. Here's the angry recalibrate. Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah,
little social experimenting going on.
Mm-hmm.
Look what we can make these people do.
So I don't even want to talk about the stupid bypass thing of the Touch ID sensor.
The bypass hackies.
It's not a hack. It's not a hack, people. It's not a hack. Just so you know, it's not a hack.
No, it's not a hack. It's a bypass. I said bypass.
Yes, I know. But I was reinforcing to people that are listening to the show that... maybe first timers and don't get what we're saying. And so they're thinking.
I use hack very loosely.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, so the description of this bypass is first the fingerprint of the enrolled user is photographed with a 2400 DPI resolution.
Oh, you're talking about the actual... I thought you were talking about the bugs where you can crash the phone and make a phone call and that sort of stuff. You're talking about...
You know, it blows my mind that people find that stuff out so quickly. Those people must not have any time. They must just be those... what do they call them? Fuzzers or fuzzing? Is that what that's called?
No, I think they're security researchers that, you know, they use the past sort of... They know that, hey, very often if you can get the device to crash, you know, when it's on the emergency call mode or whatever, that it will place a phone call, so then they figure out how to make it crash.
Yeah.
Just to see if it'll work again.
So, all right, but going back to this Touch ID bypass thing, so you have to, they photograph your finger at 2400 DPI, which is nuts. The resulting image is then cleared up, inverted, and laser printed with 1200 DPI onto transparent sheet, and I'm reading this verbatim, by the way, with a thick toner setting. Finally, pink latex milk or white wood glue is smeared into the pattern created by the toner onto the transparent sheet. After it cures, the thin latex sheet is lifted from the sheet, breathed on to make it a tiny bit moist, and then placed onto the sensor to unlock the phone.
Mm-hmm. So this is not a trivial procedure.
No, not at all.
And lifting a quality print is extremely difficult.
I mean, it would be so much easier to just get the person to put their finger on the phone.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I agree.
So ultimately, this is not a concern.
No.
No.
No, a respected security researcher came out afterwards and was like, this is ridiculous. This takes way too long.
Right, and there's
like 30 hours to like pull it off. And
you know, I wonder if that's why Apple enforced the 24-hour thing, right? So after 24 hours, if you haven't unlocked your phone...
It's 48, actually, but yeah.
Right, so after 48 hours, you can't just use your fingerprint. You have to use the passcode that you set up as your backup.
Right, and if you reset the phone, you can't use your fingerprint. You have to use the passcode.
As in restart or as in reset?
If you reboot your phone.
Okay.
So if you hold down the sleep, wake, and the home button.
Yeah.
And reboot it, restart it. The first time you have to unlock it with the passcode, you can't use your fingerprint.
So, correct. Yeah, there you go.
So if you run a software update, then the other thing is if you fail the fingerprint scan twice, then you have to use the passcode
for that
finger. You can use a different finger if you have multiple registered, but so, you know, like, and I don't know if that one, I'm curious if it has a timeout on it, because there's a couple scenarios. I did this with George Starcher, because he made the mistake of, he switched his simple passcode to a longer passcode based on a recommendation that I made, because I said that was what I was going to do now that I had the fingerprint scanner. You know, so rather than use the simple 4-digit passcode that someone could probably guess at more easily, now that I can simply unlock with my fingerprint and I don't as frequently have to enter in the code number, I was like, oh, I'm going to use a non-simple passcode. So George did that, but then he forgot his simple forgot his longer passcode.
Whoops.
Yeah. Hold on a second.
Adam's doing an interpretive dance.
Yeah, I was wondering what that was.
Sorry, the people came home.
That's fine. Oh, so you ran off. That was yeah. The sound of little feet running across a room.
Yes. So where was I? Oh.
He forgot his password.
So he forgot his password. What he discovered was that when you do that and you have the fingerprint scan sensor turned on, the fingerprint ID... If you misenter your passcode a certain number of times, then it will go into disabled mode.
Yep.
And it will just be disabled at first for like a minute.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next time, if you try again, you get one try. And if you fail that again, then it's like 4 minutes or 2 minutes. It starts going up and up and up, and it never goes back down. So you can get to the point where if you keep trying to enter passcodes, you know, you'll be waiting like 4 hours before you can try and enter a passcode again. So there's like multiple layers of locking down on this thing, you know, in terms of someone trying to just like brute force either with a physical fingerprint or, you know, the passcode number. So,
yep.
You know, and by that time, hopefully if you've used your Find My iPhone and you've, you know, wiped the device or done other measures to protect it. So, and then on top of that, right, we've got the activation lock. So even if they get all the way past that, figure out some way to wipe your phone, then they run into the activation thing with iCloud.
Right. Yep. So they're pretty secure now. So what do we have here? Apple TV, the update that came out, version 6.0, has a really cool feature that a couple of you listeners emailed about, and it's the automatic setup, and I'm really excited about this thing. I think that you have to have the Apple TV 3, is that correct, to make this work?
I don't know. I don't have an Apple TV 2. I haven't tried it.
Yeah, so the way it works is, because it is a total pain in the butt to set up your Apple TV until you have it on a Wi-Fi network and then you turn on the home sharing so you can do stuff with your remote app on your phone or your iPad. So what they have done now with this automatic setup is you connect your Apple TV to your TV, power it on, and wait until it shows the setup screen. You unlock an iOS 7 device, turn on Bluetooth and the Wi-Fi and make sure you're connected to the Wi-Fi network you want to use. And then you just touch your device to the Apple TV and it just magically sets it up, which is totally awesome. I guess you have to enter the Apple ID and password on your iOS device, but then it sucks all the information off. Just totally awesome. Now, I don't know if it does stuff like Netflix and Hulu. I don't think that it... I wonder if it has access to that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I don't know.
But hey, I mean, it takes care of a lot of that hassle. Once you bridge the gap where you can use the remote app on your phone to type things off.
Yeah, that's the key.
Yeah, that's...
Yeah, there was this horrible time when I went somewhere and I took my app. I'm like, I'm going to take my Apple TV, you know, to use in the hotel. And I got there and realized I had forgotten the Apple remote. And you can do nothing.
Yeah, you're dead in the water.
Yeah, because you can't join the Wi-Fi network.
Right, because you have no way to enter in information. Now, this would solve that.
I wonder if that would work, though.
I don't know if it would work at a hotel, but I mean, in theory, right, if I was at the hotel and connected to the hotel network and I had my device with me, I should be able to
reset
the Apple TV to factory settings and...
Right. Yeah, I think you'd have to reset your Apple TV to factory settings. But
yeah, does it have a physical way to do that?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Interesting. So maybe not. But.
Yeah, I don't think it would work in that case. Ooh, someone's trying to FaceTime with me.
So wait, you're actually... this never occurred to me just now. If you do not physically have an Apple remote with you with an Apple TV and you need to start a new setup of any kind... You're screwed. You simply can't do it. But until now, where you can do the tap your iPhone to it.
Yep, that's true.
Yeah, because you have to get it on the Wi-Fi network to be able to use the remote app.
Right.
Yeah,
and the remote app won't work ad hoc for whatever reason.
Yeah, I'm fairly certain that the Apple TV 3 is required for that, too. I'm going to look at the support document. Yeah, Apple TV 3rd generation using Apple TV software 6.0 or later. So, although, you know what? Here's a really great public service announcement to everybody who has an Apple TV 2. Those things are worth twice the amount you paid for them on eBay. Did you know this, Adam?
Yeah, I got to sell mine.
That is craziness.
I'd rather have a 3 anyway.
Right, that's what I'm saying. You know, it was crazy when I saw that, but you can
jailbreak, right?
Yeah, because you can jailbreak. You can get like 3 times the amount you originally paid for that thing if you're really good about marketing the thing. But I mean, getting more than what you paid for originally is a really cool thing. And I never really jailbroke my Apple TV until I saw that and I thought, "Geez, there must be something to it." So I put Xbox Media Center on there, and I went through a bunch of hassle to make Project Free TV go on there. And it kind of sucks, but it's kind of cool at the same time. So if you're one of those people who has a second gen Apple TV and you have no desire to jailbreak, you can get some moolah for those, especially if it's a pre-jailbroken Apple TV that's not tethered. You can make some real good stuff happen with that.
Did they fix Plex Connect yet?
I don't know. I never use Plex.
About yeah, I don't know
Plex,
either.
Plex Connect app. Unless you use Plex with a non-jailbroken Apple TV.
And I have no idea. I don't know if they fixed that yet. So
it's a really clever hack where it commandeers the Trailers app and turns it into a Plex client.
Oh, I should look into that. I'll give it a try. So what are we looking at? The iPad, the next gen iPads. They're not sure if the iPad mini is going to have Retina, or they're not sure if it's going to ship by the end of this year with Retina. If it doesn't ship with Retina,
it will ship with a Retina display. I'm just saying that right now.
Yes. That's what I was trying to say. But it looks like the iPad 5 is totally ramping up for production, so we'll very likely see that. It looks like we're going to see it in space gray and white. I'm not sure about gold, but probably. And we're also hearing rumors that we'll probably see an 8-megapixel camera on those. We're hearing that from KGI Securities, Ming-Chi Kuo.
You know, and I would have normally laughed at that because it's like, I never use my full-size iPad for a camera.
Yeah, but you know,
but
there are a lot
see
of people
it
who do
so much now.
Me too.
It's crazy.
if she wasn't my girlfriend, I would totally make fun of her. Actually, I probably did for doing it when we were in DC. She like halfway we took a cab and then rode some bikes, and we ended up at the Lincoln Memorial. And we're up there, and she pulls out her iPad. I'm like, what the heck? You have your iPad with you, and you're taking pictures with it? Okay, I guess that's cool. And at least it's an iPad mini. But I saw tons of other people doing the same thing, too. So it's definitely something that people do. And I think that, you know, the way that Apple operates is when they see stuff like that happening, when they see those types of trends, they tend to cater to that sort of thing.
Yep.
So I think that's what they're going to do.
Hey, if people are going to do it, at least they should have good photos, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess.
So.
Yeah.
They're going to do it.
They are doing it.
And so. Having better photos is better experience. And I think what Apple knows is that's the value, right? And the consumer, from the consumer side of things. So if their iPad takes way better photos than an Android tablet, that matters to people more than, ours has a 57 megapixel sensor, but it's super tiny.
Yeah.
You know, it's a super tiny sensor, so the pictures look like crud, but you can make them really, really big.
Yeah, so they can look bad really big.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So have you guys played around much with the True Tone flash on your 5S's? Because I'm really...
I haven't. I tested it out a little bit, and it looks like a flash photo. And I don't like flash photos, so I mean it looks like a nicer flash photo.
Yeah, I need to play with it more because I'm not sure if the couple photos I've taken are indicative of what I'm going to get, or just I need to play some more because I'm not sure if I'm getting the quality that I should expect off of those photos.
So yeah. Were they bad quality?
They weren't any better than the flash photos that I would get off my iPhone 5, which I don't like.
Interesting.
Have you shot the same? So you were shooting like the same scene side by side?
Jeff? Yeah. And yes. And I need to do some more setups, and get a wider range of photos.
You know, you should
really. I have like a couple. And that's
it was really subtle. I mean, the few tests that I did, it was very subtle, but the True Tone seemed to have a little bit better, at least in my opinion. And this is a totally unqualified, unprofessional, just naive person looking at it going, yeah, that that looks a little more like the thing that I took the picture
of. Well, that's actually, that matters. That to me, that's more important than an expert high-end pro photographer looking at it.
But it was really, I'm with you though, it was really minor, it seemed like to me.
Well, you know, take some pictures of some pale people. Because pale people do not look good in those flash pictures.
All right, I'll do some flash-based selfies.
There you go.
I don't think you can do that, but good luck trying.
No. Well, if I plug in my iPhone headset, then I could do it.
Especially now that you can't do the whole finger release trick anymore. That's the most annoying thing about the new camera software.
When,
that burst mode. You can no longer do the hold the finger on the shutter and then lift.
And you can't turn off burst mode?
Nope.
That sucks.
Nope.
So Netflix and RDO were both updated today. Netflix now has AirPlay video support, supposedly. I haven't gotten it to work. Did you guys try it, play with it at all?
Netflix has it?
It does today.
Netflix has it, but I haven't had a chance to try it yet.
I tried it. It didn't work.
Yeah. I've been using it on Amazon, got updated a while back, and I've been using Amazon's, and it works great.
Yeah, that's excellent. I'm glad they did that. Well, you could do Netflix streaming from your iOS device using the mirror feature, but it wasn't high quality, and it totally sucked because you couldn't
but
exit the app.
Here's the thing on the AirPlay thing, though. So with AirPlay, I have a Netflix on my Apple TV, so why do I need the AirPlay thing?
For the reason that if you are like me, you aren't necessarily just sitting in front of your television for the whole length of whatever you're watching. Either you want to start it on your phone and move to your Apple TV and bounce around, or you want to, at some point you're watching it on your Apple TV and you want to jump around, go somewhere else. I do that a lot. You know, there, I'd say half the time that I watch something, one of the movies that I have on my computer, that show up via iTunes on my Apple TV, I would say half of the time I start watching it using Air Video on my phone and watch a little bit on my Apple TV via AirPlay, and then I bounce it back to my phone and walk around and bounce back and forth. So that's totally handy for me.
Interesting. Yeah.
So
I mean, it was a big deal for things like the PBS app and for Amazon and stuff like that, because they don't have apps on the Apple TV yet. So
right.
But for Netflix, I don't know that I'd use it all that much because I'd rather just stream it right to the TV direct.
Yeah, it's definitely not, it's not going to be as big a deal as those other apps for sure, but it definitely helps out for crazy That's people cool. like me who can't sit still. And RDO, they now have a free music streaming service for iOS devices, which is pretty cool. So, So if you want to listen to RDO and you don't want to pay for it and listen to it on your iOS device,
and you don't
do
care
that.
About customized stations,
right? Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Which don't isn't that the main reason to use RDO or Pandora or iTunes?
I would assume, but
otherwise
then again,
it's
maybe
just like
we
a
don't
radio,
use,
right?
Yeah, but maybe for some people that's all they really want. I don't know.
Is iTunes radio any good? I haven't played.
Yes.
It.
Yeah. I really like iTunes.
Freaking
Radio.
Rocks.
Hmm.
I mean, it's just as, I don't know, some people will probably argue with me. I used Pandora fairly regularly. I wasn't a like avid user, but for me, iTunes Radio is at least just as good as Pandora was. And because I'm an iTunes Match subscriber, I don't get ads. So it's even more rocking.
Yeah. I'll give it a try. I'll play with it.
Yeah, I really like it a lot.
The key, I think, is to make sure that you don't just do like a single artist station. I noticed it when I did that, it would sometimes get repetitive a little bit quicker.
Like with the same songs?
Yeah, where it would start to loop around. But Pandora does that too. I mean, if you make a station just based on a single artist, eventually you're going to start hearing, you know, like after a couple of days or something like that, you start hearing the same songs when you fire it up and stuff like that. So I found that if I add in more artists, if I'm a little more diligent about, yes, I like this, no, I don't like that, here's some other similar artists I'd like to hear on this station, it gets better and better. And then my absolute favorite feature, though, is the little slider where you can adjust it between hits and variety and discovery.
Ah, cool.
Yeah. So you can kind of tune your station to more, hey, I want to hear more hits, or I want to hear more obscure stuff. And it's kind of cool when you do the obscure stuff, you start to hear stuff off of albums that, you know, aren't the big radio cuts. So it's almost like getting more B-sides or something like that.
Huh.
Which is cool, I think.
I like it, yeah.
Ooh, pure pop. That sounds like fun. Not.
So I don't know. I like iTunes Radio a lot. I think it works really well.
I think it's really great.
Where's this little dial thing that you're talking about?
If you hit the little I button after creating a station.
Oh, create. You have to create a station to see that?
Yes.
Oh, I see. Okay. They just... Oh. Neat. If you like Arcade Fire. Okay, yeah, I got to play with that. Fun stuff.
I'll be curious to hear what you think. Were you a big Pandora user at all, or are you a big RDO guy? Or
I recently switched from Spotify to RDO because of the social stuff. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
But you pay for RDO, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, so I'll be very curious to see how it compares to the paid RDO service.
I'll be curious to know if I even try using it or continue using it. Because I typically use RDO and Spotify and those sorts of things for discovering albums I know about or stuff that's... I mean, sometimes I see the charts and I say, oh, I'll check out this album. But
yeah,
typically it's stuff that I don't listen to often and I just want to say, hey, play this song right now, and I don't have it. Kind of deal. So we'll have to see.
I mean, that's the other advantage of iTunes Radio for that sort of stuff is, you know, I'm starting to like flag things when they come up on my different stations, and then it goes right into your iTunes wish list. It's just nice to have it all in one place. You know what I mean? So you're not having to bounce between a couple different apps. So I can switch over and listen to my own library. I can switch over to listen to iTunes Radio. I can switch over. Well, used to be able to switch over to podcasts, whatever. Don't get me going on the podcast thing.
I'm not happy with the new layout of the music app, though. It's harder to find, harder to grab the album you want.
Yes.
Wish there was a way to fix that. Yeah,
Apple needs to just dump what they're doing with music management.
The fancy, stupid
and
stuff.
And start over. Yeah, because searching and management, it's just a real pain.
Well, at least you have Siri. She can play
that's
stuff
true.
For you.
That's, yes.
Sometimes she'll
Siri's
play stuff
not
for
on my Mac.
Oh, that's the other thing is with iTunes Radio, you can use Siri as well.
Oh. So you can be like, hey, Siri, play me some jazz, and she'll do that.
Yeah. I think you say play iTunes Radio Jazz Station or something like that.
Huh.
Something to that effect. And then you can say play more like this or never play this song. If you're driving the car and something comes up, you can use Siri commands to adjust that station.
Huh.
Yeah.
Interesting. Oh, yeah, you say play... Play my reggae station.
Probably would work.
That's an example in there, so I guess, yeah. Okay, so... Unless
yeah, it better
you guys,
work.
Yeah, it better. So if you guys don't have anything else to talk about, it's time for our picks, right? So... Jeff, you want to go first?
Sure. All right, so my pick is from Smile Software. It's PDF Pen Scan Plus.
Ooh, yeah.
It's a brand new app, and holy frack, is it cool. So you can use your iPhone camera to take a photograph of a document or take a photograph you already have of a document, and then it will OCR, optical character recognition, the document. So it will scan the text and turn it into editable text that you can use wherever you want. And it's slick, it's easy to use, and it works really well. And it's just amazing to hold an iPhone in your hand, take a photograph of a printed page, or like the first thing I tried, I took a photograph of my Twitter stream from my iPad.
Uh-huh.
And then I OCR'd that, and it worked perfectly.
So you can probably do like a screenshot too. It'll just take anything.
Yeah, and then it will OCR it, and it's just amazing to hold something the size of an iPhone in your hand and watch it very quickly run through a document and OCR everything for you.
Cool.
It's very cool. And it's like $5.
It is indeed. It's $5. So yeah. Adam, what's your pick?
Yes, sir. Has no one here done Mr. Reader yet? The RSS reader, Mr. Reader?
I don't think so, but it's definitely popular.
So when Google went through its whole, you know, killing Google Reader thing and we all had to move to another service, one of the big bummers was my favorite RSS reader on iOS, Reader, was only updated for some of the new services with the iPhone app. And they took a long time to update the iPad version. Well, the iPad version came out and I was all excited and I bought it and I was going to switch back from, I had been using Mr. Reader and I was going to switch back to Reader, and I went back and what I discovered was that I really like Mr. Reader's interface better than the new Reader interface, which shocked me because I was a huge, huge Reader fan.
Yeah.
And what I really like about it, well, actually one of the killer features is I use my iPad mini a lot to do my reading. And with Reader, I would always have this scenario where the controls were, when I was reading a portrait or something, I think were on the left-hand side. And it's like, man, I really wish when I was holding it in my right hand, it'd be more convenient if I could have it on the right-hand side. Well, Mr. Reader, when you're reading articles, has this little button and you can toggle the location. So it can be on the bottom of the screen, it can be on the left of the screen, it can be on the right of the screen, and you can move it around. Not only that, is they have this cool swipe gesture where if you slide your finger in from the bezel, it gives you a forward and back article button as well as a close button. And it just sort of pops out from the side. And that can come from, you know, whatever side you want, regardless of how you set up the interface for the app. And just that feature alone is enough. But then it has integration with Pocket, which I use for saving off things for like longer form stuff for reading and what have you. You know what? I haven't played around with themes because one thing I was going to complain about is I guess it has themes and the theme is a little heavy. You know, I do like the sort of simpler UI of Reader, but yeah. I just noticed now here as I was looking at it, it has themes. So I need to go in and explore that. But it, you know, it has folders, it has starred items, so I can star things off and save those for later. Yeah, it's just really awesome and clean and easy, and it's become my new default reader for iOS. So Mr. Reader.
Cool. And it's $4.
$4.
Yep. So my pick this week, I think we might have talked about it, but it's definitely worth talking about again if we haven't, it's worth talking about for sure. It's Uber. And I got my first chance to actually use Uber over the weekend in DC, and dude.
Yeah, Uber rocks.
Dude, it's great. I love the Uber. And I told my mom about it as soon as she got in town for the wedding, and I think my mom is probably the biggest fan of Uber now. She was just telling everybody.
What level of car did you go for?
I experimented, I think, with all but the taxi. So,
cool.
So Uber, if you don't know what it is, it's an app that lets you say, hey, I'm here. I need a car to take me somewhere. And so they have different levels of car. Depending on the areas, they have Uber X, they have taxis, black cars, and SUVs. And it's affordable pricing. You don't have to. And my favorite part about it is that when you're done with the ride, you say, see you later. And you walk out of the car and you don't worry about money. because it's all taken care of with Uber.
Very cool.
So it's just hooked up to your credit card. And so is the taxi, is it an actual city taxi sort of deal?
I think so, yeah. Okay. Yeah, they had some troubles when they went into New York. I think it's, I want to say it's been resolved because, you know, the Port Authority or whatever controls all the taxis in New York and what have you. And so they ran into some trouble there. But I think they finally got taxi service working in New York. Don't quote me on it, but I thought I had read that.
Yeah. So I used UberX, which is, in my experience, it ranges from... so the cars are, they have to be 2008 or newer is what one of the guys explained to me. And typically they're pretty good looking cars. I rode in, one guy picked us up in a Chrysler 300. Another guy, it was a Ford, I don't know, a nicer Ford, you know, these for the Uber X, the black cars, they were typically town cars. And then the SUV was an Escalade when I did it. And, you know, when you go with the black car, the SUV, the drivers typically have like candy and hand moisturizer and, you know, sanitizer and that sort of stuff in the car. So you can, you know, and they usually give you waters and stuff like that. So they're really nice and fancy. But I mean, even the Uber X is, it's nice, and they typically don't screw you around. I had one experience with a guy who, well, several of the guys, when I say, hey, take me somewhere, they say, okay, do you know how to get there? Which is kind of confusing to me, because I thought that you should know how. Do you ever experience
Well, you put
that?
In your destination into the app, right? Don't you?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, so they should have that information. I mean, one of the cool things, a couple of cool things about the app, you know, when I used it, was one, it shows you where the cars near you are, first of all, and what kind are there, so you can call one of those if it's available. And then it also shows you the driver and the picture of the driver, so you know who's picking you up. And then it also gives you a push notification if you want, like when they get within, you know, a certain number of blocks or a certain range of you, so you know they're out there looking for you.
Yep.
It gives you the pricing, I think. Did you get the pricing up front? I don't remember if you get the full rate up front or not.
You can get a quote.
Yeah, you can get the price quote. And then, like you said, the awesome feature is not having to, you know, worry about tip. Everything's included. So what you pay is what you pay. So, yeah, I don't know. It's just the convenience of the whole thing. And it's, you know, it's a little pricier than I think in some places where you would pay for a taxi. Although I got an email just today about, I guess, the Uber X vehicles are going to be discounted for a while. So if you want to try it out, maybe now's a good time to try it out.
Cool. Yeah. And you know, I was impressed with the fact that, so, when we took the, grabbed an Uber from our hotel to the airport, the guy was nice, but the paint on the hood was peeling, and we had bags obviously for the airport. And he took a long time to show up, and he said that, oh, sorry, yeah, my trunk broke down. So he wouldn't let us put, I mean, we had bags, many
and
bags.
And you couldn't put them in the trunk.
We could not put them in the trunk, so we had to squeeze them all in the car, and it was kind of obnoxious. And then, you know, he had his own GPS, so he plugged it into he was actually using Apple Maps to get us. But it's frickin' Washington, D.C., we were right downtown, and we were trying to get to Reagan in a reasonable amount of time. And we were just caught up in the thickest traffic, where it was a situation where we were waiting at an intersection through like three cycles of green lights, and I don't think we moved at all.
Ouch.
Bummer.
And ouch. Yeah, so it was that
bad.
Well,
you did get to rate your driver, right? I mean, that's the good thing.
Well, yeah, I'll tell you about that in a second. So Here's another plug for Waze, because Waze totally rocks, W-A-Z-E, if you don't know about it. So I open up Waze, I'm in the backseat of the car, and I'm like, there's got to be a better way. So I plug it in, and it says, turn left. And I say, okay, turn left here. And so I'm these directions are totally crazy from his standpoint, but he's just following my directions because that's what he's there to do. I'm like, turn left here, now turn right, now turn left, now turn right, now turn left. And I don't think we would have made our flight, and we had two and a half hours to get there, and we would not have made it sitting in that traffic. But ultimately, so you get to rate your driver, and I guess the drivers actually rate the passengers as well. So this is what a couple of them told me, and I'm not sure how. Oh, so this is true. So they can actually charge you more if you're a sucky passenger.
I don't know if they can adjust the rates.
No kidding.
I think Uber does that.
They can maybe choose not to pick you up.
That's possible. Yeah, I would say
Take your, not to take your request.
Yeah. So, but in the end, I left him. I gave him like a 3-star, and I put a comment in there talking about the things I wasn't happy with. And surprisingly, I got an email about 2 hours later from people at Uber, and they said, "Hey, it doesn't sound like you had an Uber experience, and so we're going to look into it and make it right." And by make it right, they don't mean give my money back or anything like that. But, make sure that next time either he's not on the road or he's improved the situation, because it's one of those socially built and supported deals. So for the most part, it's very nice. And they're all vetted face to face, and they have to go through a training program and whatnot. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe they'll send you a discount or something too. You never know.
Maybe. We'll see.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's free for the app, Uber, UBER. You don't need the umlaut over
it. It's awesome. Yeah, I got hooked on it by Rod Roddenberry.
Yeah. Doing it in San Francisco, right?
No, it was actually here in San Diego Comic-Con.
And it's in certain cities only. So if you're opening it now and you're like, I don't see it, it's because it only works in more major cities. So there you go. So with that, you can find all of our iPhone picks and show notes at wehavecommunicators.com. You can review the show in iTunes. We'd love when you do that. Tell your friends. That's awesome, too. Feedback at wehavecommunicators.com is the address to which you can send feedback and questions, comments, and all that other stuff. If you want to do an audio comment, email it to that. That works best. Or you can call us 202-642-6667. Advertising, of course, is handled by Backbeat Media at backbeatmedia.com. Check out Squarespace. They're awesome. We love them. Use the code WHC10 for 10% off during the month of October. And, of course, WHC11 for November. And, do that. Of course, Jeff Gamet is at the Mac Observer, macobserver.com. At jgamut on Twitter, and zazzle.com/jgamut is his Zazzle store. Thanks for being here, Jeff.
Oh, sure thing. We have like a kick-ass show, don't we?
I guess we do.
Yeah.
We're making it happen, Cap'n.
Boy, howdy.
Mm-hmm. Adam Christensen's at the MattCast, mattcast.com, at MattCast on Twitter. And of course, member.mattcast.com is the where you can find the member version of the MattCast.
Yep.
Thanks for being here, Adam.
Thanks for having me.
And I can find me on the Twitter, or you can find me on Twitter, at Michael Johnston. That's my name. And at Get Appler as well on Twitter. As well, check out Appler, GetAppler. We just launched the mobile site. Did we have a show since I've launched the mobile site?
I don't think so. I've mentioned it a couple places, though.
Okay, so if you don't know yet, now you know there's a mobile version of the site. It totally rocks. It works really well on your iPhone, which it makes sense. It's an app site. So check it out. Pull it up on your iPhone. It automatically shows you the mobile version of the site. And if you really, really, really like the desktop version on your iPad or on your iPhone, you can press the little desktop site button at the bottom. But it works great on the mobile version. So when you get those emails and you're hanging out in bed in the morning and you want to rate the new apps that you got, then you can do it right there without going to your computer, and it's awesome. So, yeah.
Kudos to you, Michael, on all the hard work for making that happen, by the way.
Thank you. It took a lot longer than I thought it would, but then again, that's the story of the whole project, right?
Yeah, that sounds about right. That's how this stuff always goes.
Yeah, and also I should say that I'm looking for someone to help out with the project. So if you're interested in doing any sort of PHP, JavaScript, HTML, that sort of stuff, just drop me a line, michael@getappler.com. And we can talk about that. So with that, we'll see you next time on We Have Communicators.
An iPod. A phone. and an internet community.
How are we going to communicate this?
The stylus.
We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus. No. No. Yuck. No. Yuck. Yuck. No.